creation of this new broadcasting creature, the commentator. Because one of the things about the Lindbergh case, and this is going to be true of the New Deal, and of course, the menace of not.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Because I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the boys.
This is Damian Katera. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. The airwaves as a creative medium.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bough. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Gina Martin of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland, Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Siamo lieto di poter rievocare, in poche parole, le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze, da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio e il nuovo mondo.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Luke Parsno reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul signed a bill that bans the dumping of radiological waste from the Indian Point Energy Center nuclear plant into the Hudson River. Hochul said, and I quote, "The Hudson River is one of New York's landmark natural treasures, and it's critical we stand together to protect it for generations to come." My administration remains committed to protecting the economic vitality of the region and working closely with local communities who have advocated so passionately for this cause," end quote. The only opponents of the bill were a labor union that represents workers at the Westchester County site and the owner of Indian Point, who said the measure is unnecessary and could cost jobs. When it was open, Indian Point routinely dumped radiological waste into the Hudson River, as other nuclear plants around the country do in different bodies of water. Indian Point had been delaying a planned release because of opposition throughout the Hudson Valley. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Andrea Makel reports for Porcupine Soup that next month the Cairo Town Board might allow a solar farm on the 30 acres at the former Joel M. Austin Road landfill. Two companies, 42 Renewables of Westchester County and SOL Source Power LLC of Troy, want to put solar farms there. The proposal from 42 Renewables is to create 4 megawatts of power, and SOL would create 6. Because the landfill was closed in the 1970s before current regulations, it was not capped to today's standards. In January, New York's Department of Environmental Conservation said that agency, and I quote, is supportive of solar projects located at closed solid waste landfills, which align with the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act mandate of 6 gigawatts of photovoltaic solar generation by 2025, end quote. Town Supervisor Jason Watts said, and I quote, "We are going to look at both of your proposals," end quote. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. Mid-Hudson News reports that House of Representatives Speaker Kevin McCarthy is coming to Sullivan County next week for a private fundraiser for Mark Molinaro. Molinaro's 19th district seat is expected to be among the country's most contested in next year's election, as Molinaro's win in 2022 helped give Republicans a narrow majority in the House. Anyone except the media with $75 can attend, but the location is a secret told only to those who pay. Former Governor George Pataki and former local Congressperson John Faso will also attend the fundraiser. Molinaro represents the 19th Congressional District, which includes Greene and Columbia counties. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, or community calendar for COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
In honor of National Honeybee Day, New York environmentalists want Governor Hochul to sign the Birds and Bees Protection Act. The bill prohibits selling neonicotinoids and use of seeds coated with these pesticides. It also requires the state's Department of Environmental Conservation to review the latest science concerning active ingredients in them. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency finds neonicotinoids can jeopardize more than 200 plant and animal species protected by the Endangered Species Act. State Senator Brad Hoylman Siegel, the bill's Senate sponsor, describes some impacts these pesticides can have.
In addition to driving down the populations of critical pollinators like bees as we celebrate International Honeybee Day, neonicotinoids are linked to a host of health problems in humans, including neurological damage and birth defects.
In humans, neonicotinoids are linked to altered insulin regulation and lower testosterone levels. The legislature approved the bill last year, though Governor Hochul vetoed it, citing the Department of Environmental Conservation's current regulatory role and its stringent pesticide program. The EPA made interim decisions on these chemicals, such as restricting when pesticides can be applied to blooming crops to limit exposure to bees. Corinne Hanch, owner of Love and Mama Farm, says these pesticides aren't as beneficial as pollinators are.
Corn and wheat grown from neonic-coated seeds cause near instant death to any insect who touches these plants. And we are seeing dangerous levels of insect die-off. Farmers like me, we rely upon insects, i.e. pollinators, for our fruiting crops and our seed crops. Plus, we rely upon beneficial insects for pest control.
A study in the journal Nature finds exposure to neonicotinoids reduced a honeybee's ability to survive in winter. Between 2020 and 2021, beekeepers across the U.S. saw 45% of their colonies die off. Connecticut's General Assembly considered a similar bill this year, but it wasn't approved. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The climate conflagration rages from Maui to Montana. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Climate change fueled drought and high winds created the perfect conditions for raging wildfires across the Hawaiian island of Maui last week, burning the historic town of Lahaina to the ground. As of Thursday, the death toll was 111, but that number is expected to go much higher as the difficult task of searching the acres of burnt wreckage slowly proceeds. The number of people killed by the massive conflagration could surpass 1,000. The fire struck on August 8th, not long after the hottest July in recorded human history, and just as a decision was issued in an historic climate trial that took place in Helena, Montana, over 3,000 miles away. There, 16 young Montanans, aged 5 to 22, were suing the state of Montana for violating their constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment. After almost 2.5 years of litigation, Montana Judge Kathy Seeley ruled in favor of the youth plaintiffs, declaring Montana law mandating aggressive promotion of fossil fuels at the expense of the climate was unconstitutional on its face. Vise Fonseca, a tourist visiting Lahaina, told Reuters while at a shelter on Maui,
"We got really real when we saw the flames. And I had to think fast. We had to get out. We left our vehicle. And myself, my wife, and our 5 kids, we all got in the ocean. We found a floating board that we hung on to. And everything, we're out there floating. And it was just so surreal. And everything was burning around, explosions, cars blowing up. Like, embers were flying. Just, we couldn't breathe. There's no air. It's just the carbon monoxide."
Countless stories are emerging of people who ran towards the flames to save a family member, friend, or pet, and perished in the wind-driven 2,000-degree Fahrenheit wall of fire.
"I was born and raised in Maui. I'm Kanaka Maoli, Native Hawaiian, come from 7 generations, and our island is on fire."
Paniela Ng, former member of the Hawaii House of Representatives and now the national director of the Green New Deal Network, said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
"Our most historic town was set ablaze by wildfires. Hundreds of people have been evacuated and hospitalized. The death toll is climbing, and people are searching for loved ones right now. We're a tropical island here on Maui. We're not supposed to have wildfires. Lahaina Town is actually, it's often characterized as a tourist town, but the people who live there, which should be the focus, tend to be some of the most rooted Native Hawaiians that I've ever met. They're really the keepers of the ancestral knowledge. And to me, the fire is a tragic symbol of this trajectory's terminal point, like where it all ends up if you continue down this mode of extraction as a way to live."
Extraction was central to the case made by the Montana youths who prevailed at the trial. In the same week that Judge Seeley issued her ruling, barring Montana from implementing its pro-fossil fuel laws, the state had 43 active wildfires fanned by record-breaking triple-digit temperatures and high winds.
Montana is one of the states in our country that has had laws on the books that requires it to promote fossil fuel energy and fossil fuel development at a time when we're in a climate emergency.
That's Julia Olson, chief legal counsel and founder of Our Children's Trust, the nonprofit law group representing the youth plaintiffs, speaking on Democracy Now!
their laws also required them to ignore the consequences of that and the ways in which greenhouse gas emissions from those fuels fuel the climate crisis. And so these young people used the Montana Constitution, which protects not just their right to a clean and healthful environment, but also their right to dignity, to health and safety and happiness and equal protection of the law.
Julia Olson and Our Children's Trust have similar cases pending in other states, including in Hawaii and in the case known as Juliana versus United States.
In 2015, we filed a case on behalf of 21 youth under the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution against the federal government for its active role in causing the climate crisis. But the Biden administration and the Attorney General Garland and Solicitor General Prelogar are fighting tooth and nail, just like the Trump administration did, to stop this trial.
In one of the most recent court filings in the Juliana case, as reported by Lever News, the Biden administration argued there is no constitutional right to a stable climate system, unquote. The youth plaintiffs of Montana, Hawaii, and elsewhere beg to differ, as do the native Hawaiians and residents of Maui. The climate crisis is not a looming threat. It is here now. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weekend weather report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a partly sunny Saturday with a temperature high near 73 degrees and a northwest wind at around 10 miles per hour. Tonight it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 56 degrees and a light and variable wind. On Sunday, it will be sunny with a temperature high near 83 degrees and a southwest wind at 3 to 6 miles an hour. And on Sunday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 63 degrees. And on Monday, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 83 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the People of the Waters That Are Never Still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Red, green, blue, out of white, color.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Accra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms' International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Niagara Falls, city of wonder, city of light. A city where nature's full range of sublime power and terrific beauty are on display. From the Maid of the Mist to the Devil's Hole, from Suicide Point to the country's largest sect of traditionalist, mystic, psychic hydroculturalists, there's too much to enjoy in just one day. So stay a night with us, or stay forever right here at Hotel Niagara.
Uncle knows how much this trip means to me. Most boys my age have already become men in our community. Some have even taken wives and assumed prominent roles in the farmhood. But my passage to maturity has been waylaid by my weak heart and a proneness to boils. So to accompany my uncle, the most respected figure in the Isidorian community, on a long journey to survey some land in Canada that may indeed be our future home, fills me with profound pride. We have been driving northeast from Ohio on a hot summer day for about 6 hours. So far on the journey, there's been very little conversation. Uncle knows better than to waste words when they're not necessary. But I can't wait to rattle off the many stories from our travels when I return home to my friends and siblings. Like when I saw the crazy three-wheeled motorcycle, or the green dinosaur statue at the gas station. That was funny. I don't know much about this trip. Uncle only told me we were meeting some other Isidorians to potentially purchase several acres of fertile green land, with many a gully for the farming of water. I've heard rumors of a massive project in the works, where Isidorians from across the country are joining up to cross over to the other side together. The other side of the border, I'm assuming. On the peninsula where the mighty Niagara River meets Lake Ontario. There is a nearby colonial-style town there, I'm told, where we can sell our produce and crafts and distribute The Sunflower, our monthly newsletter of water, agriculture, and faith. The location also happens to sit near what our holy books refer to as hydro-terrestrial correspondence points of divine energy, which converge close by. Uncle knows that this is the right time to move the community. A move like this would offer a new beginning. Not only have we outgrown our homestead in Ohio, but our community has struggled greatly of late since the terrible disappearance of my young cousin Elijah last summer. As for me, I am giving my all to suppress my uncomely hopeful giddiness. The trees along the highway go by in a blur, but the miles cannot be covered fast enough, as I just cannot wait to be one of the first to set eyes on this new land of promise, where I may one day raise a family and pull my firstborn from the rising water of a deep well, just like Saint Isidore. We are now entering New York State, and the feeling in my heart is growing more intense and may not be entirely attributable to anticipation. When I press my hand to my chest, I feel my heart pound with no discernible rhythm. It is more like a spasm than a beat, and there is an annoying twitch underneath each eyelid. As I close my eyes, I see colors that I have never seen before or imagined, slowly expanding outward, colors and patterns bleeding into each other, creating spirals, marbling, and sometimes exploding and dissolving like a show of fireworks. Time is flickering. Here now, out now, here now. I open my eyes, but instead of the highway in front of me, I see my sister's face, smiling into a white beam of crystal sun. The animals from our farm seem to be smiling also. Beyond them in the distance, I see a woman in white running on water with two hounds beside her. And now there is nothing. I cannot move. I am paralyzed. No, I have completely shut down. Everything has let go. I am not alive. My eyes have closed, but I can still see everything around me in some sort of wide circle of vision outside of my body. I see my uncle sitting next to me, totally unaware of my passing. I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye to him. I didn't say anything at all. I was too distracted by the sensation of dying for it to properly register as death. I never really got to know Uncle and assumed this time spent with him would be a chance to learn about him and from him. Instead, he barely said a word to me, and now here I am, lifeless in the seat next to him. I wish there was some way to communicate with him now, but it doesn't seem possible. I am completely severed from my body, as if trapped in a frightening dream from which I cannot wake. But this is not a dream, and I am not afraid. I have been dead for nearly 2 hours now, and Uncle has yet to realize it. My head has fallen to the side, with my mouth gaping wide open, a position that one could easily interpret as deep sleep. The last sign on the road said we were entering Buffalo. That was 20 minutes back. And now Uncle is pulling off into a service station. He mumbles something about urination. My lack of response does not seem to faze him. We pull into the parking lot. Uncle gets out and stretches his arms and back. He pulls a bottle of juice from a pocket in the car door and finishes it. He opens the back door and tosses the empty bottle in. He grabs some seeds from a Ziploc bag while he's back there and pops them into his mouth. He chews and looks down at his feet on the hot pavement. Finally, he addresses my corpse.
Okay, Joseph, time to wake up now.
He says from the outside of the open door. He ducks inside the car from the driver's side, slightly annoyed, and shakes my shoulder good.
Joseph, hey, Joseph. Joseph?
My head rolls back on my neck and lands with a thud against my window. Uncle simply nods. He looks to see if there are any people around and now slides back into the car. He whispers, shakes me rough, licks his fingers to check my pulse, nods again. Uncle now starts the car, but only drives it a few yards back into the service area parking lot where there are no cars around. He is rolling his phone in his hand, unsure if he should use it or not. Uncle knows that he can't call an ambulance right now. Authorities will not allow him to continue transporting my body, and it's against our religion to allow a body to be handled by someone other than a member of our faith, or to inject a body with chemicals and all that stuff they put in a body before burial. Our natural bodies must be tossed in a river as soon as possible after death. Uncle fully reclines my seat to make it look all the more as if I am sleeping. He cracks a window, and he walks towards the service area, disappearing into a building that says it has a McDonald's, a Sparrow Pizza, a Burger King, a Starbucks, a pretzel factory, and a Frank's Loaded Taters, all under one small roof. Even though we are prohibited from eating this kind of food, it's too bad that I cannot join my uncle to experience such a fascinating place. Uncle has now been in the service area for more than 40 minutes. He must be collecting his thoughts and making arrangements for how to handle the situation. Many thoughts have gone through my own head, if it is indeed my head that thoughts go through now, but they are surprisingly removed from feelings. I can say that I will miss my family. I can say that I am afraid of what's next. I can say that I am disappointed that my life has been cut so heartbreakingly short. But honestly, I would only be saying these things. I have no feeling about any of it, really. No sadness, no fear, no real longing. Suddenly, everything just is, and I cannot force myself to feel any other way about it. So far, death is not quite what our holy book said it was going to be like. But as with everything else, I don't feel anything about it. All I feel is a strange openness, as if my spirit self is one big orifice. My uncle is now emerging from the service area, carrying a bag. It is a bag from McDonald's. He opens his door and places the bag on the floor beside his feet. Uncle must have been so very hungry from grief at my passing that he had to break our usual dietary restrictions and choose hot, substantial food over the breads and dried fruits that we have packed for the journey. He starts the engine, eats some fries that he had stored in his shirt pocket, picks at his ear, looks at me, and races back out onto the highway, causing my head to do a full circle until it lands squarely on the dashboard. We've reached the last exit before the border, in Niagara Falls, New York. Uncle must realize there is no going further. He knows he cannot bring a dead body across the border. This is as far as we go. He pulls into a motel. The sign looks old and melted. The name of the establishment is indiscernible. There are no other cars in the parking lot. There's an ice machine, a sun-bleached old pop vending machine, and a huge mound of discarded belongings taking up two parking spots. This is not any kind of place that people in our community usually stay, but these are extreme circumstances, and Uncle knows best. He hurries into the motel office, which, like the rest of the motel, looks abandoned. But he inserts a coin into a large bronze machine on the desk, and a key pops out. Uncle returns to the car, collects his McDonald's and a small travel bag, and heads into the motel room, leaving me in the car. I am alone and dead, which is no different, I have come to understand, from being dead and in the presence of others. Uncle has been in the motel room for nearly an hour. Everything has been very quiet. There hasn't been any activity in this motel. Uncle has occasionally opened the door of the room to check on the car. He does this again now, looking to the left, then the right. He is thinking. He approaches the car this time and opens the door to check on me. It's quite late at night, but the temperature has barely dropped. I can't say that my body is smelling very good in this muggy air. Some of what was inside of me has also leaked out. Not a lot, just a slow release of some excess pee and poop. Enough to make an enclosed area disagreeable, and that is apparent from my uncle's facial expression. He leaves me, but quickly returns with a sheet. He wraps my body in it the best he can, continually keeping a lookout around the parking lot. Then he pulls me out of the car. I'm half hanging in, half hanging out, all twisted up in the sheet, which is now barely covering anything. He wraps my arm around his head and lifts me up, carrying me like a big swaddled baby in his arms. I like that. He struggles, but reaches the room, closing the door behind him with his foot and dropping me as gently as he can on the carpet. He drags me by my ankles to the bathroom and lifts me up into the tub. He turns on the shower, letting it run cold on me while he runs out of the room, grabbing a small plastic garbage can on the way out. He returns with that garbage can filled with ice from the motel ice machine and dumps it into the water with me. Uncle can now relax a bit. He checks around the room, opens the small fridge, then looks under the bed. Uncle is curious. Either that, or he is looking for something. He looks to the night table drawer and slowly opens it. Nothing in there. He opens a second drawer below and pulls out a shirt that must have been left behind by a previous guest. It's a brightly colored shirt, well worn but folded neatly. It's the type of shirt I sometimes see being stored in crates at the auction house. I believe it's called tie-dyed. Uncle inspects the shirt thoroughly, rubbing the material between his thumbs and forefingers. He even presses it to his face and holds it to his forehead. He smells it good. He brings it with him as he sits by my body in the iced tub. He puts his head down on the back of his hand against the plastic lip of the tub. Poor Uncle is exhausted. He remains in this position as he finishes his leftover cheeseburger. He returns to the bed, lays back and puts the tie-dyed shirt over his face. He stays like this for some time without moving, just breathing, with the shirt covering his face and his hands to his sides. Now he moans. He breathes in, moans louder, lower. Now he is silent, his breaths getting longer, deeper, the shirt rising and falling with each breath. He turns over onto his stomach as if in a trance. His face is sleepy and doughy like a baby. It rests flat against the bed. He slides the shirt along the bed and against his chest. Two-fisted, he squeezes it to his body and wrinkles up his face. He curls his legs up, making himself into a ball. Now he rocks himself from side to side, first slowly, now faster he goes. He holds the tie-dye shirt tight near his parts. Oh, now he is pumping it into the air as he rocks and bringing it down into his face, which he throws back and forth. He is expressing himself in a very peculiar way for a grown man, seemingly both attacking and cuddling the t-shirt. He is pumped up and down perhaps 10 times now, faster and faster. His eyes are closed. 20 more pumps with his whole body into it now. And suddenly his eyes pop open, and he abruptly stops, jumps to his feet, and he tosses the shirt at the baby blue curtain in front of him.
What do you care? What is it doing?
Now he peeks out the window, barely pulling the curtain back. Just enough to peek out. He turns, looks to the carpet, and makes an exasperated fist at it. Something is troubling Uncle. He picks up the t-shirt from the floor, holds it in his arms, and weeps. Is he crying for me? Is he crying for Elijah? Is he crying for some other reason that I just don't understand? Whatever the reason, the t-shirt comforts him. His cries turn into a laugh as he curls up on the bed with the shirt, rests it against his cheek, and falls asleep. It is morning now, just after dawn. Uncle is making the bed and preparing to leave. With the exception of a single shriek coming from somewhere outside in the distance, the night has been extremely quiet. At one point, Uncle woke up to use the bathroom. When he was finished, he sat down beside me and observed my body. He moved my arm up and down, surely noticing some stiffness. He opened one of my eyelids and looked into my eye. His head circled as if he were looking for something behind my eye. And then he touched my eyeball. He pressed it a little more firmly a second time to see what would happen, and his finger went right through my eye, knuckle deep. Then he closed my eyelid again. He smiled as he wiped his finger on his slacks. After Uncle left the bathroom, he removed all of his clothes, except for his large black traditional beaver hat, which I've never seen him remove. And then he did some stretching in total nudity before putting on the tie-dyed t-shirt. He ran his hand round and round the front of it, then traced the designs on the front with his finger. It was at this point when I could clearly see what was printed on the shirt. "Keep truckin'," it said. And below it was a very pleasant parade of dancing bears. A delightful shirt, although not very modest. It looked very tight on him, but he was comfortable enough to sleep in it. He slept peacefully for the rest of the night. Uncle is very careful in returning me to the car, loading me into the back seat, draped in the same white sheet. He is still wearing the tie-dyed shirt. He stands out near the hood of the car and removes his hat. For the first time in my life, I can see his hair, a waterfall of long, matted locks. He gives a grin and flings his hat like a saucer onto the pile of garbage in the parking spot next to us. He slowly walks over to the driver's seat, gets in the car, and then looks back to address me.
Ready to help us all cross over, Joseph?
By way of some holy miracle, I respond. Some not-quite-human sound emanates from my mouth while my tongue hangs out of it. Uncle drives on towards the Rainbow Bridge to Canada with a satisfied look on his face. He turns on the radio. It's a strange song about a man named Casey Jones. Thank you.
The satellite is playing, twisted in a grain. Sundays on the canyon floor. But I can hear you loud and clear through the static and the beam and the squelch.
the real estate space. When the tailgate drops and the stops and the place unfolds into a daydream, party come, party come, party come, as a whole brand, party
about my dad.